Ms. Jones, Mr. Redko.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm Attorney William Redko, and I represent the plaintiff appellant in this case, Police Officer Joseph Andrew, who appears here in person this morning. Your Honor, this case is a case that's a continuing saga of events that occur in the city of Milwaukee, more particularly with its police department. In this particular case, we had a police officer arrested without probable cause. There was not even a single credible witness that came forth before this police officer was arrested and incarcerated. Plaintiff appellant fully understands the case law of this circuit, Woods versus Chicago, that there must be at least one credible witness, whether it be the punitive victim or some credible witness, to set forth some evidence that would create probable cause for the events that lead to the arrest of any individual. In this case, we had nothing. We had a defendant.
Well, he had a bloody nose, of course.
Yeah, and there was no causal connection between the bloody nose and Officer Anderson.
What's your theory of what caused the bloody nose?
We don't need a theory, Your Honor. We don't have any evidence.
Well, of course you do, because in deciding whether there is probable cause to arrest your client, that requires a comparison between alternative possible explanations.
Your Honor, here are the possible explanations. One, you have a defendant who was not credible. The district court even admitted the defendant was not credible, and the putative victim was not credible. In this particular case, the putative victim said that my officer punched him while placing him into the squad car.
You're not answering my question.
I am, Your Honor.
What is your theory as to what caused the bloody nose?
On a 12-year-old juvenile that's as irate as this particular juvenile was, it could be anything and everything, including a dry nose.
That is not an answer. Would you please give me concretely your explanation of how he got the bloody nose? Did he punch himself in the nose?
Your Honor, he could have hit himself with his knee into his face while he's sitting in the back seat of the car. He could have had a dry mouth from medication, which created a dry nose that created a bloody nose situation. A 12-year-old child, it's not unusual for a 12-year-old child to get a bloody nose, especially an irate, out-of-control juvenile who was irate and out-of-control for at least 15 to 20 minutes prior to getting the bloody nose.
But here, isn't the problem here that we have Sergeant Jones who says there was no blood on the juvenile's face or shirt at the scene at the time of the arrest? Then we have the juvenile who says he was punched, and then when he gets to the District 2 garage, he has a bloody lip and blood on his clothing. So, and that's all in terms of probable cause. You know, there is no reason to delve into a lot of other reasons or things that happened that we learned after, you know, afterwards. The issue is there was no blood when he was arrested. There was nobody else in the car with him. There's no indication that the kid did it himself. And then when he arrives to the garage, he's got the bloody nose and blood on his shirt.
Then let me answer it this way, Your Honor, if you will allow me to answer it fully. What happened here is we have a putative victim who says, my officer punches him as he's getting into the squad car. He says he starts bleeding immediately upon being punched. We have another witness, another police officer, who was interviewed by the arresting officers, who said that they saw the kid in the back seat of my guy's car, and he wasn't bleeding, okay? The kid also says in his statement that my officer did not punch him en route between the scene of the arrest and the garage where he gets out of the car. In order to make any causal connection that my guy caused this kid's bloody nose, you'd have to believe the kid that he was punched as he was getting into the squad car. The defendant, the arresting officers, knew for a fact that didn't occur. They knew that was a lie. For them to somehow connect the bloody nose to my guy punching him is based on speculation, and you need more than bare speculation to arrest an officer. And as it turned out, you're absolutely right. The kid was a liar. Now, take it another step further. This was a uniformed squad car with a plastic partition between the front seat and the back seat. My guy took 2 minutes, 2 seconds to drive the kid from the scene of the arrest to the garage where he's taken out of the car, and all of a sudden he develops a bloody nose. My guy had no opportunity, even if he wanted to punch this kid. He would have had to get out of the car, walk around, open up the kid's door, and punch him. It was simply impossible for that to occur in 2 minutes, 2 seconds. And moreover, the kid admits that didn't occur. The kid says, my guy did stop the car, got out, opened the back door, and the kid, the punitive victim, says, my guy tells him, enough of these bullshit lies, I'm going to kick your ass, and then closes the door and gets back in the front seat. Nowhere does the putative victim say, my guy punched him en route between the scene and the garage. And moreover, the defendants knew that. The defendants also knew that when the kid was in the back seat of the car, fully secured, after the point, in fact, when the kid says he was punched and immediately started bleeding, we have a witness that saw the kid in the back seat of the car and he was not bleeding. Now, any reasonable police officer would have taken that statement right then and there and would have done a further investigation. There were all kinds of witnesses at this scene, and it's not that I'm saying further investigation is what was that we're complaining about. What we're complaining about, they had no evidence at the time they arrested my guy that any reasonable police officer could rely on, and that at that point, because they had no evidence any reasonable police officer could rely on, they should have at least gone, conducted some interviews, had the kid medically cleared. And that's another point. That shows you another point of how the defendants lied and tried to distort this record. They state all over the arrest report this kid's injuries were severe. And under Wisconsin state statutes, anytime you have a juvenile in custody with severe injuries, you're supposed to have the kid medically cleared. This kid was not medically cleared ever at any time. And moreover, they had evidence from the kid's mother.
Let me ask you about the First Amendment issue.
Okay.
What exactly did Debraska say? This is a public statement on which you hang your First Amendment claim.
Yes, Your Honor, I saved some rebuttal time, which I'd like to save, but I will answer your question. On the First Amendment issue, Debraska, 2 days after my client was arrested, gets on TV and indicates that the union has looked into this. They find the complaint to be totally baseless and meritless, and they're hoping that my guy will proceed forward with a lawsuit, as it is a matter of public concern, and it has had this chief's policy, which led to my client's arrest, has had an effect on the public safety in the city of Milwaukee, with other officers refusing to do work for fear of becoming part of an internal affairs division investigation and ending up in jail like my client did. And he also went on to say that my client was looking into hiring an attorney. Well, then on the June interview, when it became after the district attorney cleared my guy from charges, he got on TV and indicated, not Debraska, but the newspaper or the television reporter indicated that my guy had hired an attorney. And lo and behold, the whole investigation gets reopened by the chief of police, which is an unheard of thing to open up a closed criminal investigation after it's already been decided to be no charge by the district attorney. And in the charges where they terminate my client, they directly cite from his complaint filed in this particular case. This is nothing but pure retaliation against my client for trying to protect his Fourth and Fourteenth Amendment rights.
How did Nebraska's statement become attributed to your client? I don't understand.
It was authorized by my client to be made. And Debraska got on.
What did he authorize precisely? Just the announcement that he was going to sue? Or?
Yes.
That's what he authorized.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Well, you
thank you.
The rest of your time. Mr. Conrad?
To please the court, the facts in this case, in the sense that the pertinent facts, that is, what the investigating officers knew.
What I found puzzling, though, why did they arrest Anderer? I don't understand that. I understand why they would investigate the possibility that he committed a battery, but why arrest him? I don't understand. It seemed precipitate.
The chief's policy.
I thought that the police would be so quick to arrest one of their own
The chief's policy is to arrest a police officer under the same circumstances a private citizen would be arrested.
Okay.
What the officers knew and when they knew it is clearly documented in the police investigation. Those facts are not in dispute. And clearly, those facts establish that there was probable cause. We have the classic case of a victim who comes to an arrestee who comes to the police station. His lips are split. His nose is bleeding. There's blood on his clothing. The lieutenant in charge rightly asks the juvenile what happened to him. He says, "The police officer hit me." He then talks to the sergeant, the supervisor at the scene. The sergeant says that there was no blood on this juvenile at the scene. He doesn't know of any confrontation. There was no fight. He didn't struggle with the police. And he knows that he was conveyed by Officer Anderer, and Anderer had, the juvenile was exclusively in Anderer's custody. He talks to him again, and he says Officer Anderer struck him in the face. Officer Anderer, of course, has no explanation, makes no statement.
Did she deny it?
Makes no report. Excuse me?
Did she deny it?
In the complaint, he alleges that...
I ask you a simple question. Okay. Did she deny hitting him?
Did the officer deny hitting?
Right.
I think he denied it to Sergeant Jones, but made no other statement.
You think, or he did?
I believe, if my recollection of the report is correct, he didn't.
No, did he or did he? Not if the report is correct. Do you know whether or not the officer denied hitting him? That's a simple question.
I believe he denied hitting him, but I would have to check the record to be sure. I believe he said to Jones, "I didn't hit." Jones asked him what happened, and I can't quite now recall whether it was he didn't say anything or he said that he didn't hit him, but gave no further explanation. I would have to check Jones' statement, but that is in the record, so it can be verified either way. But he did not report any unusual conduct by J.R. Officer Anderer. He did not report any unusual conduct by J.R. He did not indicate that the child had had a seizure or had injured himself or any other matters. You have to remember, he was handcuffed and he was seatbelted in the back seat of his squad car.
Now you say that Anderer can't use Nebraska's speech to make a First Amendment claim. You can never use another person's speech. Is that really true? What if you tell a story? What if you say to a reporter, "You know, I'm not articulate. I don't know how to get access to the media, but I'm concerned about, you know, police tactics or something like that, internal investigation. So I'd like you to, you know, discuss this on television." And then the police get wind of this and they fire the officer for having talked to the reporter. Couldn't that be a First Amendment violation?
Well, I would not say it could never be. Under certain facts, I'm certain it could be. But I'd like to point out two things here. First of all, there's nothing in the record to support Mr. Retko's statement that Nebraska's statements were authorized by Anderer. That there's nothing in the record to support that. And number two, Nebraska's statements, if you look at them, had nothing to do with Anderer's particular situation. His statements concerned...
I thought he said he hoped that Anderer would sue. Is that incorrect?
Well, yes. His statements concerned that there were too many district attorney's reviews, that there were too many internal investigations, and he objected to the chief's policy of investigating every citizen's complaint, and he said he hopes that Anderer would sue, and Anderer's statement was simply he was hiring an attorney to look into that. Anderer didn't even say that he was falsely arrested. He just said he was hiring an attorney to look into that. The attorney may well have decided he was properly arrested and told him he had no lawsuit. But I don't think these are the kind of circumstances where you would allow or where you would consider some sort of derivative speech theory. I think it's quite different. For example, if a person meets with a representative or an advocate and the two of them work out a statement and another person makes the statement on their behalf, I think that's the kind of case you were thinking about. And certainly under those circumstances, a First Amendment case could be pursued, but that is not the case here. In the little time I have left, I just want to say there's also a qualified immunity issue. I'd like to point out to the court that if a very qualified federal judge, Judge Stottmiller, concluded there was probable cause, how can we say that the decision of the police officers on the same information was somehow unreasonable?
Did he also make a finding that the individual who was allegedly injured by the officer was not credible?
Yes, but what he meant was that...
Not what he meant. Did he make that finding?
He made the finding that the individual statement standing alone was not credible, but the individual statement, J.R.'s statement in the context of the facts of the case was credible.
What does that mean? Tell me what that means.
Well, what that means is that his statement was corroborated by his injuries, by the fact that he was exclusively in Andrew's custody, by the fact that Andrew came up with no explanation of what had occurred. And so those other factors corroborated the statement, which perhaps if it were alone, would not be by itself credible. And I think that's what the judge meant, and that's what the record supports. I just want to make a comment on continuing the investigation. He made a comment that somehow there's something wrong with continuing the investigation. I think we pointed out in our submission that after the district attorney did not charge, the chief continued the investigation. He wanted to take this case to the Justice Department because we had a situation where there were four juveniles. The three white juveniles were not injured, and a black juvenile was injured. And for that reason, we continued.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Redko, how much time do they have? 1 minute.
First of all, I want to respond to Attorney Conrad's comment about the wounds on the face. There's all kinds of issues of fact as to what those particular pre-existing conditions were. We have identification technicians who are trained police officers who take pictures of domestic violence victims, battery victims all the time. They took pictures of this individual, and they found that this particular individual, the marks on his face were consistent with dried-out mouth, like mouths dry out in the winter, canker sores, some kind of other pre-existing condition, but it was not consistent with a punch that occurred that night. There was no swelling on the face. There was no bruising. There was no wounds, period. It was a pre-existing condition. Now, as far as them saying that the chief has a policy.
Did Ander ever give any explanation as to why he was bleeding?
Ander put the kid in the back seat. He was fine. Drove him to the garage. The kid gets out with a bloody nose. My guy has no idea how he got the bloody nose.
And so did he say that to someone?
Yes. He told Sergeant Jones that. How am I supposed to know? He denied hitting the kid to Sergeant Jones, and Sergeant Jones says, well, how'd the kid get the bloody nose? And my guy says, how am I supposed to know? He didn't know. He had no clue. This kid gets a bloody nose on the way. The other thing is, the chief's policy that every police officer be treated like a private citizen is incorrect. The record clearly in this case sets forth that if this would have happened to a private citizen, every detective in the police department knows you interview every witness at the scene before you arrest anyone. That didn't happen in this case. Hardly anyone was interviewed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Redko, Mr. Conrad. Next case.